Chuck Chat Technorama for Monday, October 31st, 2005.
Any similarities between this podcast and actual events and or persons living or dead are purely coincidental. Names have been changed to protect the innocent, and no animals were harmed in making of this podcast.
This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech,
it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hygroscopic Margot vanes. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated annulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milford trunnions. And the facient lunar wane shaft. Lotus O-deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplaneration. Retroincabulator.
Welcome to Technorama. Please hold on. The podcast is about to start. Our next stop will be Concourse C. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, man. I'm happy you're back.
I'm happy to be back, too. As you can tell from that odd intro, I've been on vacation and my head is filled with odd phrases such as, please keep your hands inside the podcast at all times. And other things like, in the event of an emergency, your earbuds may be used as a flotation device. All right, I confess, I wasn't really listening to what that lady was saying on the plane. Hey, a big thanks to Craig for holding down the fort while I was gone. I listened to the last show while sitting at the poolside while my daughter Lisa was swimming Thursday night, and I was laughing out loud to the RoboChuck. That was very creative.
I'm going to keep RoboChuck air in the closet, and, you know, in case I got to go to the ATM machine and withdraw some money.
I was kind of hoping you'd bring him to the expo.
Oh, mate, yeah, we'll bring him to the expo.
That thud when he hit the desk just had me rolling right there. Like, oh, my. Hang on, let me just bring him up here. Thunk.
Yeah, he's heavy. He's kind of like Buster on the Mythbusters. Not quite as burned.
And speaking of which, coming up in tonight's show, we've got some Halloween urban legends. We've got some interesting tech stuff I noticed while on vacation from the land of Mickey Mouse. And final installment of our Robot Geeks. You got me thinking RoboChuck. The geeks around the corner that I talked to at the tech school.
Truth is, they actually built RoboChuck and sent it to me.
Yeah. Does he play blackjack any better than I do? Yeah. And of course, you've probably already heard, we have our first installment of the interview with Adam Savage. So hold tight, and there's more Technorama to come right after this.
On this day in tech history for October 31st, 2005. It's October 31st. This is the 304th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 61 days remaining, and this is the final day of October. It was on this day in 1587, Leiden University Library opens its doors after its founding in 1575. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle publishes The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on this date in 1892. And on this date in 1912, The Musketeers of Pig Alley, directed by D.W. Griffith, debuts as the first gangster film. Also on this date in 1926, magician Harry Houdini dies of gangrene and peritonitis that developed after his appendix ruptured. And after 14 years of work, drilling is completed on Mount Rushmore on this date in 1941. Also on that same date in 1941, American photographer Ansel Adams takes his picture of a moonrise over the town of Hernandez, New Mexico, that would become one of the most famous images in the history of photography. And the most frightening of all, on this date in 2000, the last Multics machine was shut down. Happy birthday on this date in 1835 to Adolf von Baer, German chemist. Also happy birthday to John Anthony Popel, the English chemist, born on this date in 1925. And happy birthday to astronaut Michael Collins, born on this date in 1930. And that is the way it was on this day in tech history for October 31st, 2005.
Oh my God, they grow out of those pods.
This is Summer Brooks from the Dragon Page, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Chuck Chat Technorama. Can you figure out who's the one and who's the zero?
I have a vague idea who's the one and who's the zero tonight.
Yeah, I'm the one.
My head is filled with zeros. I close my eyes, all I see is SpaghettiOs.
What you need to do is put a little... peroxide in your ear and kind of lay on the side on your side for a little bit and you'll get a grid of those zeros.
What?
I'm sorry, that's swimmer's ear.
Dude, my brain is having a hard enough time keeping up. Don't do that to me. I'm suffering from like post jet stress or whatever you call it.
Okay.
I wanted to give a special thanks to Mark Shepard who promoted our show tonight on dig.com. He's been doing a great job of, well, he's just been doing an all-around great job. Thank you very much, Mark.
He's our Technorama champion.
He is. He's covering the bases that I keep forgetting to cover.
Yeah. First, second.
Second, third. Yeah. I won't go there.
Yeah. Yeah, let's move right along.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we cover the news?
Yeah, what little news we got. Actually, okay. This is the only thing that I thought was really newsworthy that I've seen recently.
Hold on, we got to get the news off the machine.
Oh.
Well, where's my news noise? There.
Yeah, here you go. All right, the news. I saw at Target they're going to start selling a stand-up arcade cabinet, full-size, like you've seen in the past in the arcade. Has 12 games on it, kind of like those little joysticks you can buy for your TV.
Yeah.
Has all the controls on it to play any of those games. Let's see what games they had on it. Defender, Defender 2, which I didn't really play so much. Robotron, Joust, Bubbles, Splat, Sinistar, Rampage, Root Beer Tapper, Wizard of War, Timber, and Satan's Hollow.
I've only heard of like two of those, dude.
What? Two?
Yeah.
Defender, Robotron, Joust. I've played those.
Okay, a three. Sinistar. Four.
Rampage, you know, that's the one with the... You're stomping on the city with the... you got the King Kong looking... You know,
how much are they selling this for?
$500.
Ouch.
And you know what? I had the same question that this guy had in his article. Where's Galaga?
Or Gorf.
Yeah, Gorf or... Galaxian.
Probably couldn't secure the licensing rights to those.
I don't know. These people own it. Or Midway did. Oh, well.
Maybe they were the other guys.
No.
Defender wasn't a Midway game.
Defender? No, it was Williams.
Yeah.
Anyway, But it's $500, not too bad. So maybe we will, maybe I'll be purchasing one for Christmas.
I don't know.
See if I can get my wife.
That's a heck of a present to yourself.
Hey, honey, well, I think I want to stick this in the living room.
You could do like most of those arcade geeks that get the full-size ones. You get stuck in the garage, and that's where it stays.
Yep. Hey, I'll try to bring that in my house. I might be doing the show from your house.
Well, we probably have better timing on the show.
Yeah.
All right, should we roll the segment about the robot geeks?
Yes.
All right, third and final installment with these guys from the tech school. We'll be right back.
Hello.
Tell me a little bit about the programming language. Is it interpreted? Is it compiled? Is it...
Well, the way it's done is it's not a typical... It's not like C++ or COBOL. You can't really compare it to that.
Okay.
There's similarities that are noticeable, like the statements and things that you declare in there, but it's kind of unique in itself.
Yeah.
The way it's done is it's actually... It's more like a basic computer language.
Okay.
If this sensor is on, move to here.
Is it mostly event driven?
Yeah, a lot of it is event driven.
Okay.
It's not limited to event driven. Our particular program is very much event driven, however.
I'm trying to see how I can articulate this.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Is the programming language tied in with the operating system, or is it a Windows system running this thing on top that spits out information to a serial port?
Kind of, in a way. The robot KUKA is real unique as far as all of the robots are PC-based. They run off of a Windows operating system.
And are they tying in with USB, special interface?
Special interface is how they go through it.
Something internal called a soft PLC, programmable logic controller, tied in with the robot itself, tied into the PC mainboard. There's actually in there just a regular PC motherboard with a Celeron processor and
you
hard
plug
drive.
In a PCI card that's got some connector out the back that hooks up to the robot.
Special interface, right.
Okay. Yeah.
So and it's all internal. Like this right here, what we see right here, this cabinet's about 4 foot tall.
Yeah.
Inside of that contains all of the drives necessary to run the different axes on this larger robot behind us. But also inside of it, there's actually literally a computer tower is inside of there. That does all the operating system behind it.
Keeps their costs down.
Exactly.
Now what is you've got a 14-inch display screen out here.
Yep.
Nice color touch panel.
Yep.
Right. What role does that play in it?
That's their user interface. It's just a way of, for us to, we've got a configuration here, we can actually go in and monitor the different states of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also the virtual table. This is what the users will be looking at. If they can't see their cards, they can actually look and see what the score is on here. They can tell who's been dealt what and whose turn it is. And then also it'll prompt you whether or not you want to hit or stay.
And we've got four stations. Each one has a stay and a hit button.
Yep, right.
With targeting, a lot of it with targeting with our high school age students, things like that, one of the cool little things that we added on that Aaron actually had a great idea for is the buttons we used are actually the same exact buttons that you see in arcade games. The same exact buttons.
They are.
So if
that's what you'd see on Defender or
exactly.
Asteroids or
Pac-Man.
Didn't notice that at first.
But it is. It's kind of like it's those little things that we had a lot of fun with this project. It's like, okay, we need buttons.
Yeah.
How do we do buttons?
Add a little familiarity to it.
Exactly. Well, that's a little more durable than momentary switch.
Yep. And I mean, switches in industry are incredibly durable. They're rated on pushes, and most of them are rated for millions of pushes. But having something like this available, again, familiar for the people walking up and using it, it's not a scary, industrial, huge apparatus or anything. It's very friendly and comfortable.
Cool. How much work did you have to do on the interface itself?
All of it.
You made the...
Everything was completely designed by ourselves.
All the separate screens, the buttons, everything...
Is there a workbench that you do it on a PC and upload it up to here?
That's correct. There's actually a software that we use. It's called RSVU Studio, and you can actually go through and design all these screens and the buttons that will link to each separate page and what these will talk to on the TLC.
What revision software are you on personally?
This is probably our third.
Yeah, third
revision. 1.3 or 3.0?
Oh, yeah.
That's from many, many quick revisions.
As far as it's kind of a nice thing, the program that we use to do a lot of our PLC programming, RS Logix 500, mm-hmm. every time we download to our PLC, it tells us how many times we've downloaded. I think our current count is up to 500 times.
Yeah.
A lot of it is we download the same thing again to do a complete reset of the system. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as far as changes, we've gone through so many changes since day one that the program actually doesn't even look anything like it.
Oh, of course.
But
of course.
It's the cool thing with our program is it taught us the basics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now we're going through and applying it, and then using it and applying it in something like this has just been so much fun.
Any known bugs right now?
Tons. It's very much in the development stage at this point.
And it also has a great tendency to get stage fright. Whenever somebody seems to be watching it, it doesn't want to work properly.
It worked perfect for us in the lab.
It worked great last night when nobody was here.
You watch the movie Robots?
Yep.
Yeah. All I can think of is that little teapot guy.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And it is. We've had fun with it. We've had lots of fun.
Well, that's great. Thanks, guys. It's really been informative. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Me controlled my life. Hello, this is Christian Stout from the HomeNetworkHelp.info podcast, and you are listening to ChuckChat.com, hosted by the original podcastaholic himself, Chuck Tomasi. So sit back and enjoy the buzz.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. Find out more at friendsintech.com. And speaking of Friends in Tech, hey, Craig, great job on the Server Room of Horrors, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. We all had a hand in it.
Credit where credit is due, though. It was your idea. You conceived it. You did a lot of the editing right down to literally the last minute. Craig's a programmer. You have to realize nothing's ever finished with programmers. It's a lot of times programmers don't know when to say good enough is good enough. I've been accused of that myself more than once, and he says, oh, we just got to put in this, oh, somebody suggested that, and it was, you know, he got a little carried away.
No, not too bad. Hey, there was one last thing I needed to add, and I think it made the whole thing. That was the mark at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I think it turned out pretty good. I was happy with it, and I appreciate everybody doing the voices for it. That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. We're looking forward to doing the next one. More than likely a Christmas special, and we're not going to let any cats out of the proverbial bags at this point. Oh, I walked into that one, didn't I? What was that?
You know what? That sounds like Victor.
Victor Cajio singing. Don't do it again. Don't do it again.
Yeah.
All right. We do have a couple of interesting stories before we get into the interview with Adam Savage, part one. Mm-hmm. Lead us into these urban legends, O Swami of the Internet.
Yes. Well, you know, we figured with Adam Savage being on the show that it would be good to throw out some Halloween urban legends. So here's a link over to Snopes.com, and they, of course, have their list.
Rather interesting list, too.
Yeah,
we can't say all of them on the show because this is a G-rated show, but we'll let you. We can provide links that may or may not contain mature. You know, it's probably PG-13 most of it.
Yeah. So here we go. We got a collection. They have a link to a collection of 2005 Halloween-related stories. There was a suicide by hanging is mistaken
as a
Halloween decoration.
Yeah, apparently some old lady hung herself. A suicide, they're ruling it. And this is real recent. And, and you know, people were just going by, la-da-da-da-da. Oh, hey, great hanging costume thing. You know, people hang ghosts in their trees. I don't know how you figure out it's real. What do? Go up and poke it?
Yeah, touch it.
That was kind of gruesome.
It is pretty gruesome. I have a story about that, but I'm not going to go on.
There are some accidental Halloween hangings, mostly teenagers, if I recall, in these stories. Which,
this will be funny.
Not to sound cruel, but this sounds more like Darwin Awards to me than anything else.
Yeah, but it made its way to Snopes. It was a young man was hanged for real when a Halloween show stunt went wrong. Let's see.
Well, there was another one in there about a hayride, and he took the hanging skeleton and put the noose around himself and went, hey, and then hung himself. Like, dude, oops. Anybody who puts a noose around their neck is, inviting the Grim Reaper, in my opinion.
You know, when a noose is near me about within a foot, I start getting nervous, so I wouldn't put it around my neck.
Then there's the age-old pins, needles, and razor blades in Halloween treats, which
I thought was kind of interesting. What we read. It said, unlike Halloween poisonings, most cases of tampered trick-or-treat loot involving the insertion of pins, needles, or razor blades have been... Unlike Halloween poisonings, they have been documented.
Yes, they have. I was watching a thing on the History Channel the other night, the history of Samhain and how it became Halloween, and the holiday just won't go away, no matter how much one end of the spectrum or the other wishes it would. They were saying that a lot of the pins and needles and razor blade tamperings have not been from strangers so much as they've been from relatives, which is really a scary thought.
Mm-hmm. Yo, yeah. That is a scary thought. Because I could never imagine doing that to anybody, putting something like that, of course. But anyway, children are victims of random Halloween candy poisonings.
Oh, wait a minute. You skipped the psychic predicts a Halloween murder on a college campus.
Oh, duh. I'm sorry. All right. Go ahead.
I didn't read that one. You got to tell me about the psychic one.
Well, when I first read that, it kind of made me think of Nostradamus. Didn't he predict that a college near a train track they'd have a mass murder? And that's what I heard. And the college right here down the road from me, they got a train track going, and they ended up having a party the night that it was supposed to happen. Not that they need much of an excuse to party.
And I don't put a whole lot of faith in Nostradamus anyway, because he wrote a lot of things in a lot of strange ways that can be interpreted to fit a whole lot of occasions. There's even a website that will generate random crap to sound like Nostradamus. And I pulled one out like the day after the Pope died, and it said that something about the Pope and the leader will be that's kind of creepy if a website can do the same thing.
Didn't Nostradamus predict I am
somewhere in the 18th quatrain?
Here's the psychic. Basically, this one is false. It says nearly all the details of this legend, which TV show the prediction was made on, who the killer would be, what the weapon the killer would wield, which campus he will strike, what building the murders will occur in, and how the students will be killed, vary according to where the legend is repeated. And there's like about, 8 different stories on there?
Jeez.
About the the different types, so it's just one of those rumors. Actually, I take that back. There's probably about... there's a bunch of different versions.
We've got a ton of other links on that same page. Real quickly, one of my favorites was the Halloween party goer is confused by his spouse's costume switch. Apparently, this lady said, oh, no, honey, you go on to the party alone. And she felt a little better later, so she went on to the party and didn't realize that her husband, I won't ruin the punchline, but it was a case of mistaken identity. And that was pretty funny. Yeah, it was a big oops. And there's a couple of top 10 lists in there that we can't say anything about it, but you'll have to read them. Good stuff. That's what Halloween's all about.
Yes.
Any parting comments on our top 10 list? Or the Halloween... Victor! Victor!
Get out of here!
All right. We are going to jump right into our interview with Adam Savage. Part 1 of... What did you say? 3?
Yes, 3 parts.
Okay, this is part 1. Join us on this show and a couple of others. We'll be right back.
Hey, Adam, we got Chuck on the line. He's my co-host, and I don't know. Here we go.
No, you're my co-host.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How's that go on your show, Adam? You or Jamie? Which one?
Yeah. You know, we're both co-hosts, and we're both happy to let the other have the spotlight, luckily.
Hey, just let me start out by saying we love the show, and keep up the great work.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. It is the very strangest job I could have ever concocted, and it's the hardest work and the most fun I've ever had.
I can imagine it is. Well, that comes across because I'm like, you know, I've been watching since y'all began. And it's like, it just looks like y'all are having fun the whole time.
You know, it is. There's a moment every day when we look around each other and we think, well, actually, we now look at each other and know that the moment has occurred. It's the what the hell are we doing moment. We can't believe that we've brought to bear, you know, a police department, a fire station, an FBI bomb squad, a bunch of automatic weapons to fire into a pig's carcass or sink a boat or blow up a cement truck or something. It's very surreal.
Yeah,
and you know, my kids love asking at the end of the day, how did your day go? And I'll say, on any given day, well, you know, we fired 400 footballs to see which would fly farther, or we, you know, we fired off a hybrid rocket.
And they go, yawn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do we get dessert after this?
Yeah, right. That's great, Dad. Okay.
It was a slow day, no fire.
Yeah.
Well, look, truthfully, we brought you on the show because the first thing we want to do is ask you about all about Carrie. I'm just kidding.
Carrie's a pretty excellent sport. You know, her very first day working for Jamie as an intern was one of the very first days we were shooting the pilots for Mythbusters. And we were going to do the airplane toilet myth. So within about 10 minutes of her arrival that morning, she was in a skin-tight bodysuit bent over a table so we could do a laser scan of her butt. And then she was given the job with a Jamie has a three-dimensional servo-driven pen where you can model in 3D on the computer.
Oh, that's like, cool.
In real time on your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So she took that pen and made her butt really big.
I think I remember seeing that one.
You've never seen that one?
No, I think I remember seeing that one.
Yeah, it was an early controversial one. Discovery likes, you know, because our demographic is so large, 5 years old to 70 years old,
right.
they really like to try and maintain, even though we do some risky material, they like to make sure we do it in a tasteful manner. But they also have this this requirement that somebody could turn on the television at any given moment and not be shocked by what they see without any context. And there's a shot in the airplane toilet episode where this massive fleshy butt that we made out of hot vinyl is lowering itself onto a toilet from the toilet's POV, and it looks absolutely real. And apparently one of the Discovery executives found that a little bit disturbing.
That's pretty funny.
Hey, Adam, I'm going to start with an open-ended one. What makes you tick?
You know, it's the same thing as always. I really love learning more about the world. I've always opened up every television set and every stereo that I got a hold of. I like figuring out solutions to problems, and that actually in and of itself is probably the most fun part of the show. The building and the blowing stuff up, and I think I speak for Jamie in this too, for us it's not nearly as fun as figuring out exactly the best way to proceed through an experiment and how to build the rigs that we're going to build. That type of problem solving is exactly what led me through a very circuitous route into special effects, because special effects is all about solving problems no one's ever solved before. You know, you show up at work on any given day and it's time to animate beer or make Hershey's Kisses dance around or, you know, make a nutcracker jump on a drum and swing around a tree like Tarzan. And there's no guideline for how to do that. No one's ever done most of those things before. So that type of figuring out the solution, trying different things, moving really fast under really tight time schedules, really, it made us perfectly suited for the type of schedule we do on Mythbusters, because we never end up with more than maybe 5-6 days tops for any given myth that we do.
Wow, that is pretty tight.
Well, plus things don't change very often at work either. I mean, I'm sorry, get too mundane at work, right?
Mm-mm. No, the slow days are very, very rare. The slowest days we have are days when we have to shoot blueprints. That's when we do the kind of standing around the table talking through a myth.
Yeah.
And those are usually we try and do. It's probably about every 2 weeks we'll spend the whole day in the blueprint table kind of covering the beginning and the endings and the middles of various myths. But for the most part, it's different every single day. I mean, like I said, tomorrow morning we head out to Moffett Field, to one of the largest airplane hangars in the world. It's for blimps, actually, at the NASA Ames Research Center. And we're going to set up a football passing machine called a Jugs machine and fire however many footballs we can fit into the day to see if a helium-filled football flies farther than an air-filled football.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool. I'm lost in thought trying to think of what the answer might be.
Well, you know, it's funny because it sounds sort of trivial, but once you start to get into the science of it, where, you know, we had to buy a super precise scale that could measure to the, you know, the fraction of a thousandth of a pound to measure and weigh footballs, and then we had to figure out whether the gas is compressed differently, whether there's other properties besides lightness that come to bear on it, what the variance between various footballs are, even from the same manufacturer, all of those things. I mean, we've already spent probably 3 days just going through all the various tests to figure out what the properties of a football are.
And somebody will call you out on it if you don't get it right, right?
Oh, of course. No, there's never any stream of email in my inbox telling me that I'm an idiot.
We get those, too.
You guys really screwed the boots on that one about the tracer rounds. Didn't you know that tracer rounds are, you know, just yelling at me?
We got the same audience.
You know, a couple of days ago, I actually responded to one for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
Some guy did email me about tracer rounds, told me I was an idiot. And I emailed him back, and I said, hello. This is Adam Savage. Forgive me if I take the word of an FBI ballistics expert over you, but where I come from, we begin a letter with a greeting. We include the subject in the first paragraph, and we sign off with our name.
Yeah.
And actually, to his credit, he emailed me back and said, I'm sorry, I was a little pissed off, but I used to be in the military, and these are the kind of rounds we used. And actually, he had great information. It turns out that there are several different kinds of tracer rounds, so I know at some point we'll get to fire some different ones.
Cool.
Yeah. It looked like y'all were having too much fun. Y'all were all standing abreast with all the guns. That was cool.
Yeah, you know, it when we were doing the we're doing blown away to see if a person gets blown back by a gunshot, like they do in the movie. And we got some fully automatic weapons, which are not legal in California, but we discovered this wonderful thing, which is if you want to do something that's illegal, you need to hire the police department to help you.
Oh, that's a nice loophole.
Well, there is this. It's amazing. Once you actually read the code for firearms in any given county, and I had never read a full legal code before, it turns out that, it's illegal to possess certain weapons, but there is this loophole that allows the police to possess those weapons for confiscation and for training and research. So police departments are often very pleased to help us bust various ballistic myths, and so is the FBI. So they come on, and we're allowed to try all sorts of things that most people don't get to do, like fire a fully auto Thompson submachine gun or a HK MP5. And, you know, it's a very heady experience.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and whenever I'm in podcast land, I listen to Chuck Chat.
Over time, it looks like more people have come out of the woodwork to help you do stuff. Like, I think I read an interview with you, and you were talking about how some scientists brought over some, hand-delivered some ballistics gel because y'all were out.
Yeah, you know, when we were first calling around to when we were first shooting the pilots for the show, you know, we'd call up various scientists and experts, and they had no idea what the show was. It hadn't aired, and they would say, why would we want to help you with that? That's stupid. and we'd say, well, we know it's stupid, and you know it's stupid, but most people think this is true, so help us help them understand the world a little better. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now one of our biggest audiences is real scientists and real, you know, mechanical engineers from all over the world, and they absolutely love the message of what we're doing. You know, even though our data sets are often painfully small and our time mm-hmm. constraints are very tight, we actually are trying to bring some real science to bear. And like I said, like you said, we ran out of ballistics gel a few weeks ago, and one of our researchers called up a local forensics lab, and they drove right over with some ballistics gel for us. It's wonderful.
Oh, wait, I'll bring it over.
Do I get to be on camera?
Well, I mean, you know, we did the jetpack one where you built a twin rotor jetpack.
Yeah.
Like you see the popular mechanics, and we were trying to figure out the science of the ducted fan and all the aerodynamics involved in that. And we actually called up John Rotz, who is the aerodynamics expert for Burt Rutan, the guy that won the X Prize last year, the first private thing in space. And mm-hmm. John Rotz is an amazing, prodigious brain, knows all the stuff about aerodynamics, and we're like getting him out of his off of his dinner table to go check emails from us so we can make sure we're doing the right test. You know, and these people, it's probably one of the single greatest aspects of the show is getting to work with some of these incredible experts from every field imaginable and having them not only treat us like peers, but really expand our understanding of things.
Yeah, it's like y'all were doing the rocket one, trying to get the swing to go around. And I know y'all ended up with some big brains out there. I forget who it was that came, some rocket scientists, literally.
Yeah, well, actually, that's the those are the wonderful Gates brothers. They've been on the show probably four times now. They're a bunch of rocketeers out of Southern California, and they're really honorary Mythbusters at this point because they've been on so many episodes.
Oh, cool.
They love the can-do spirit of our crew and love trying to do things in impossible periods of time. They actually, their first myth was helping us strap rockets to the top of a Chevy Impala and firing it across the desert.
Yes. I like that one.
Wait till you see the one they just helped us do. We actually built a, the myth is called Confederate Rocket, and the myth is that the Confederate Army at the end of the Civil War in 1865 actually fired a two-stage liquid-fueled ballistic missile from Richmond, Virginia to Washington, D.C., over 100 miles away.
Really?
And, yeah. And barring all the actual facts that make the myth totally ludicrous, like that rocket would have had to have reached the edge of space on its trajectory.
Right.
We actually succeeded in looking through all of the various technologies available to the Confederates at the time and making a hybrid nitrous oxide and paraffin wax fueled rocket that the firing of is quite spectacular.
Hmm.
And not only that, I have to say the plants we were working from described the optimized design based on an accelerated 8-month building schedule, and we completed it in 2 days with a bunch of plumbing parts.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, I've got a 2-part question for you, and I know the answer to the first one already, but I got to ask it. Do you consider yourself a geek?
Oh, absolutely. Tried and true. Card carrying, badge wearing, glasses taped in the middle, geek. Absolutely.
Wow, the visual's pretty clear there, Adam.
Yeah.
And but, I mean, you know, most of my best friends are of exactly the same lineage, and the people that I know that I can call and ask a question of you know, of quantum physics or of how to, you know, make my telephone lines work, it's people who collect information, you know, and collecting that, those skill sets and collecting that knowledge about the world is like, to me, there's no greater hobby. I love sitting, you know, sitting on the web just researching a brand new subject. We just looked up one the other day of, it turns out that no one's ever replicated this famous weapon from like 400 BC called Greek fire. And Greek fire was like the nuclear weapon of the pre-Christian era. And it was this liquid they could pump that was, it was like a flamethrower, but this stuff apparently burned underwater. It would destroy ships. It defended Constantinople twice from attack, and nobody has ever discovered the recipe. It was so secret. It was passed down from king to king for generations, and it's lost to history.
Wow.
So I spent last week ordering books on Amazon on Greek fire, and I'm hoping we'll be able to make it into a real episode soon.
You guys were just recently mentioned. I guess the MIT guys are out working on the death ray again.
Absolutely. Well, the David Wallace, a professor at MIT, actually inspired by the show, assigned his students in mechanical engineering the task of replicating the Archimedes death ray experiment that Jamie and I did on the show.
Yes.
And they actually succeeded in getting fire. So we were, amazingly, when that story hit, and it hit all over the web a couple weeks ago. I mean, mm-hmm. It was on Boing Boing and FARC and Metafilter and Slashdot. I mean, millions of eyeballs, and then it made the Tuesday New York Times last week. Well, we were actually right in the middle of shooting a revisit of that very episode, which we were calling the Mailbag Special, because we actually brought viewers of the show on with their death ray devices.
Oh, cool. Sweet.
And because we were right in the middle of that, we called up Professor Wallace, and he flew out with seven of his students on Friday, this last Friday, and Saturday morning, we set up a 300-mirror, polished bronze mirror array and attempted to set fire to an authentic material boat actually floating in the water instead of sitting on the ground.
Hmm.
It was pretty stunning.
Wow.
When does that one come out? When does that show?
it's usually about 2 months from
shooting
to airing.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's pretty quick. You said we brought a lot of help out of the woodwork. I mean, there's also, you see Grant and Tori and Carrie on the B team doing a lot of myths. Discovery wants somewhere upwards of 30 episodes per season. That's 30 hours of programming per season. And
wow.
Given that it takes Jamie and I 6 days to bust a myth, the math proves that there's just not enough of us to go around. So
no kidding.
Where we actually started the show with me, Jamie, camera, sound, and a production manager, five people doing the whole show for 6 weeks. It's now about an 18-person crew in San Francisco, plus probably 15 or 20-some-odd people in Australia editing the program, and another host of people doing PR and management at Discovery out of Maryland.
Wow.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
This is Victor Cajiao from the Typical PC User Podcast at www.typicalpcuser.com. And you're listening to Technorama with Chuck Tomasi and Craig Stepp.
Nerd alert!
Hey, that interview was fun.
Oh, man, I can't tell you how much. I've listened to the whole thing a few times. And speaking of which, I'm telling you, it's like 48 minutes and some change, but we'll have part two coming up in Wednesday's Thursday show.
Yep. Looking forward to it. We had a good time doing it. As you can tell, Adam is a geek. I mean, he starts throwing out the names like Technorati and Boing Boing and Slash Dot. And
fun.
I went, wow, man, the ears go right up. And like, he's on. He's in the zone right there. It's going to be hard to top that one. So.
Yep.
But we will keep trying. We've got a couple more interviews. We're working on lining those up, and we'll keep bringing them to you because we just love talking to those people.
Yep.
And if you do have any suggestions of people we can interview in the tech and science and stuff like that, sci-fi, whatever you want, let us know. If you've just got questions you want to ask these people, you go, hey, you know, I always wanted to ask the guy who made Star Trek. Well, Gene Roddenberry's dead, but you know, if you could talk to Gene Roddenberry, maybe we can channel him through a psychic or something on Halloween night. Never mind.
Move along, Chuck.
All right, I do have a couple of, as I mentioned, I just got back from vacation. A couple of interesting tech things I noticed while on vacation. We went to Universal in Orlando, Florida. We went to Disney MGM Studios. We went to Typhoon Lagoon on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I noticed a couple of interesting things. Now, when you put in the little credit card, you know, they don't give you tickets at the parks. They give you like a little credit card thing to swipe you in and say, you know, this person went to that park. They also make you stick two fingers into this little, I'm not sure if it's a fingerprint reader or if it's just some kind of contacts, like a capacitance switch to verify somebody has been there. Someone's got to tell me what that's all about. I don't know. I didn't, you know, obviously the person at the turnstile isn't going to know beans about what it's for and the tech behind it. But I was very curious. That was not there when we went about 16 months ago. So recent addition, who knows? Excellent rides. our kids are finally old enough to stay away from like the teacups, and it's a small world. And we did do some of the animatronics rides, like Pirates of the Caribbean, but we also got to do the cool stuff. I mean, the grown-up cool stuff. My nine-year-old, she's now 10, is a thrill seeker. So she's with me on the roller coasters and things. At Universal, we went to Twister, which they do the like the drive-in movie scene right in front of you, complete with a twister and fire. And it was a bit too real because they start showing stuff flying around and power poles falling down. Where I live in Wisconsin, we're at like the end of Tornado Alley. It's a bit too creepy for me. Also, Universal was the Terminator 3D experience. Oh, dude, that was cool. I'm wondering,
was it really?
How do they do some of that stuff? One minute you're watching live actors on the screen, and there's somebody dressed up like Arnold, and then on a side screen they're showing the real Arnold, and they're in sync. I mean, movement, sound, lips, everything. We were in the way back, and I think that I have this issue with 3D glasses and 3D effects. They don't really work for me because I'm trying to focus on, you know, the thing poking out at the screen at you, and I'm like going cross-eyed trying to look at this thing. My tip, sit in the back. This was awesome. I mean, they had this metallic spider-looking thing at the end, and you swear, they had three screens up there. Big screens, one in the middle, two on the sides, and the actors and animation and things were running from one to the other seamlessly. Like, you were looking into, well, big metallic thing coming out of the screen, and you swear it was hanging over half the audience. It worked.
You know, I saw, this has been years ago, and I don't know if I want to admit this, but I did see Captain Neo. The Michael Jackson.
Yeah, movie. I was just trying to piece that back together in my head.
Oh, that was the long pause.
But the
but yeah, that but it was interesting. Actually, to be honest with you, it was kind of like that. It had a lot of 3D stuff, and it was cool to see.
There's one part though where the actor on the stage takes a motorcycle, drives it up into the up a ramp, and you swear he's going to hit the screen, but he's going through one of the time vortexes to go back to the future, and he drives through the screen. And I'm like, how do you do that? And then seamlessly, the animation on the screen takes over. I'm like, wow, that was weird. There was no tearing involved in this screen, and I don't know how they did that. Very, very cool. The other good one was at Universal, The Mummy. This is like a roller coaster ride, but it is in the dark. They start you off, and you think it's just one of these typical rides where you go around and you look and you see scenes of things in the dark, and they come up. And no, you get to the point where you hit a dead end, and you're expecting the wall to go up or something. It doesn't. It brings you backwards, throws you down a hill backwards, turns you 180 degrees, and literally standard roller coaster is they take a chain and they drag you up a hill and then you coast around the rest of the ride. This thing throws you up the hill and over, and you're in the dark for most of the ride. And you expect, it's like, I think I'm going to slow down at the top of this hill. You think you're going to fly off this thing. I mean, excellent ride. Go see The Mummy.
They're screaming like a little schoolgirl.
That's practically what happened the first time. We got off of that thing and we were like trembling, but we had to go again.
Yeah, that was scary, but let's do it again.
It was fun. At Disney MGM, Tower of Terror. Nothing can prepare you for that. That is scary. You think you just go up this elevator and you drop. No.
It's the Twilight Zone thing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You go up, and they take you through the little, again, there's sort of like a magic show, you know? They build up to this thing, and they drive you around in your little animatronic vehicle. Then they take you to the drop, and you're sitting there in the dark, and you know the drop is coming, and they drop, and you go down about two or three stories, and then they haul you back up, and they drop you again, and they haul you back up. Then they open up the door so you can see outside, and so everybody else can hear you scream throughout the park, and they drop you again. And it feels like you do this about 20 times. In reality, I think it's about 4, but it's just, when will this end? I mean, it was horrible. The other good one, which was real interesting, I thought had great technology involved, was the Rock and Roller Coaster. Mm-hmm. You walk in, and while you're in line, you get it's as if you're in the studio with Aerosmith, and you're walking through the corridors and things. And they've got this one display where they start with Victrola with wax cylinders, and they sort of get up to the 8-tracks, and then they didn't quite finish because they needed an iPod or an MP3 player on the end. So I had a couple of pictures there. Another roller coaster, you sit in this train. It's supposed to be a stretch limo, but it looks more like, well, I won't go into the description because we're running long on the show. You get in this thing and you're sitting there waiting for the traffic to clear. The idea is you get the limo to go to the concert, but you got to take the freeway in their limo. Again, no big hill on this roller coaster. They shoot you like 0 to 60 in about 2 seconds. You are thrown back, and this thing just goes, and you are moving. And then it's corkscrew to the right, hard turn to the left, corkscrew to the up the hill, down the hill. And man, that thing just throws you.
Zero to warp 3 in 2 seconds.
That's about what it was. My final thing, Saturday, Typhoon Lagoon. Mm-hmm. All I can say is, holy crap, what a wave pool. This was not your standard bobbing up and down in 3-foot swells. Every 60 seconds, this 12-foot wall of water would come at you. And it was the first few times we did this, the further back you stand, the less the wave is, because it kind of fans out, and you know that way they don't wash away all the little kiddies. You're standing in 3 feet of water, you get about a 3-foot wave. You're standing in 6 feet of water, you get about a 12-foot wave.
Right.
You hear this, boom, and everybody screams because here comes this wall of water rushing out. And I kid you not, it was big. You could try to dive under, you could try to swim with it. This one guy would start nearly at the beginning. One guy was wearing goggles the whole time, and he would body surf this thing into about 4 feet of water, which was, about 100 yards. It would carry him. I would try and stay in one place, and I'd get pushed another 30 feet back just from diving under and trying to stay. It's funny because the first time you get hit with this thing, my first thought when I come up is, where are the kids? Are they safe? I mean, I've got this parental panic tidal wave struck instinct. I mean, it took me about a dozen.
You took them there, Chuck.
I know. It took me like a dozen times to stop panicking.
Did it kick in when you were going to it?
And every time you hear this, boom, psh, ah! Like, it's coming. You're standing in 3 feet of water. It's coming. It's just a terrifying sight. Hey, it was a good place.
Here, kids. Here's some fire. Play with this. Oh, wait. I'm kidding.
All righty. We better wrap it up. I did have a couple other things, but we're running really long tonight. So, do the end of show stuff for us, Craig. How can they get a hold of us?
All right. Here you go. You can get in touch with us on our listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. Email me. That's KREG@chuckchat.com. And don't forget to visit the website at chuckchat.com for our forums, our swag, webcams, and all other kind of good stuff.
And we've been a little light on the voicemail lately. I'm hoping nothing's technically wrong, but
I think everybody was on vacation with you in Florida.
Probably. I was online. There's no way I would be able to keep up with the amount of traffic these guys over at Friends in Tech are generating on a daily basis. And I had to have my podcast for the ride home.
So you were stealing bandwidth, huh?
No, I checked it out. It was legit.
Oh, okay, cool.
I thought I was doing some more driving and finding some free hotspots, but then I found out, well, I was just coming from the clubhouse, and they were cool with it anyway.
Oh, man, what the fun is that?
Yeah, I know. Another guy who actually lives there said, yeah, are you getting Wi-Fi? I said, yeah, but you got to be around the clubhouse. It reaches out to the road, but not much further. He goes, oh, I live down in number 98. They were supposed to do that about a year ago. I'm going to have to talk to them.
He's just now getting around to it.
So I'll come back if you get them wired up.
All right.
Any parting words of wisdom, kind sir?
Yes. Take care when lighting your pumpkins. Ensure that the curtains and other flammable materials are tied back.
As always, everybody, thank you for listening. We know there's lots of other podcasts you can listen to, but you chose this one. And
you did.
Even though it was long tonight, it was worth it, right?
Yep.
Put that thing down. You don't know where it's been.
Yeah.
Binary high five.
1-0-1.
Please hold on. This train is stopping.